Decoding the 260-day Zolkin cycle. It took years of detective work for me to track down the answer of why the ancients were so interested in these cycles. And I only found the answer late in 2009, while I was putting the research together for this book. Professor Robert Pedden from Deakin University's School of Sciences in Australia crunched the numbers and wrote up his discoveries in 1981, but never published the results. It didn't actually appear online until 2004, but it answered all my questions beautifully. In short, the Zolkin is nothing less than the ultimate cycle that links all the planetary orbits and their geometry together with one single common denominator, or at the very least, Venus, Earth, the Moon, Mars, and Jupiter. Furthermore, it is the only cycle that is under 100 years in length that can do this, with an accuracy better than one day in 100 years. If this sounds confusing, let me explain how it works. Take 59 Zolkin cycles and add them up. This is almost exactly the same length of time as 40 Earth years, with 99.6% precision. 46 Zolkins equals 405 lunar months at 99.7% accuracy. 61 Venus years is 137 Zolkins with 99.2% precision. 3 Zolkins give you 1 Mars year at 97.2% accuracy. And lastly, 135 Zolkins add up to 88 Jupiter years with 99.7% perfection. I was really blown away when I saw this, and hardly anyone who writes and lectures about the Maya calendar knows about it. In regards to this counting system, Pedden quotes Coe in 1966. How such a period of time ever came into being remains an enigma, but the use to which it was put is clear. Every single day had its own omens and associations, and the inexorable march of the 20 days acted as a kind of fortune-telling machine, guiding the destinies of the Maya and all peoples of Mexico. Pedden explains this further in his own words. 260 was more accurate than 360 days in tracking the moon. It was able to satisfactorily track Venus and Mars. It is the best choice to track Jupiter, and is the only choice that can simultaneously track all five cycles. These factual astronomical derivations are ipso facto sufficient to demonstrate the astronomical base for the Mesoamerican calendrical system. The 20-year Cotton cycle. The next cycle the Maya tracked was called the Cotton, made up of 20 360-day tons, for a total of 7,200 days. This is a little less than 20 years in length, and only 54 days less than a Jupiter-Saturn conjunction. One of the first books I read about ancient mysteries was Our Ancestors Came from Outer Space by Maurice Chatelain, and he found that the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction also tied in with the variety of cycles in our solar system. He felt that the correct Cotton should be 7,254 days to match the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction perfectly, which I do not think is true. But it doesn't appear to be an accident that they are so close. There is a definite resonance there. When you consider that Earth's orbit is only a little over 5 days away from being a perfect 360 days per year, the precession of the equinoxes is a little less than the ideal harmonic value of 25,920 years, and the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction is only 54 days away from being a perfect 7,200 Earth days. This may all be the result of a catastrophic planetary explosion in what is now the asteroid belt, as Dr. Tom Van Flandren has compellingly argued. the solar system would still be harmonic in the aftermath of such an event, but perhaps not as perfect as it once was. It may be that all these cycles are ultimately being driven by galactic energy fields, as we will see, and the solar system may have fallen a bit out of sync with the galaxy, at least for now. Here's what Chatelain had to say about this cycle. For the Mayas, the Khatun of 7,254 days was not only a measure of time, but also an astronomical unit to express the synodic periods of revolution of planets, or the count of days needed for each planet to be realigned with the Sun and Earth. For example, 5 Khatuns were equal to 313 revolutions of Mercury, 13 Khatuns were equal to 121 revolutions of Mars, or 27 Khatuns were equal to 7 returns of Halley's Comet. Notice that Mercury was not present in Peden's analysis, and Mars was the weakest of the cycle connections. But here, Chatelain found very nice alignments. It's important to point out that Chatelain was director of communications for NASA's Apollo program, and very familiar with complex calculations like this. I should also mention that at least 3 different insiders I spoke to, each of whom made a compelling case that he had worked in classified, top-secret projects, told me Earth has a natural 20-year cycle that forms a direct conduit between different periods of time. The 400-year Bakhtun cycle. Next, we take 20 Khatuns of 7,200 days to get the Bakhtun, which weighs in at 144,000 days, or 394.3 years. In Beyond 2012, Jeff Stray pointed out that this is very close to the time it takes Earth's inner core to make one complete rotation. Let's not forget that Earth's core appears to be a dodecahedron based on the most accurate modeling we now have available. In modern times, it wasn't until 1996 that we found out the core is rotating slightly faster than the rest of Earth and takes about 400 years to complete one cycle. Specifically, Drs. Xiaodong Song and Paul G. Richards from Lamont Doherty, the Earth Sciences Division of Columbia University, discovered there was a nearly vertical line in Earth's core where seismic waves moved faster through this area than anywhere else. The line was tilted about 10 degrees off of Earth's rotational axis, which led them to conclude Earth's core was actually on a slightly different axis than the exterior. After studying 38 different earthquakes between 1967 and 1995, as well as other seismic data, Columbia made its official press release. Dr. Song and Dr. Richards calculated that over a year, the inner core rotates about 1 longitudinal degree more than the Earth's mantle and crust. The inner core makes a complete revolution inside the Earth in about 400 years. Could this be what the Maya calendar was tracking? Think about it. The core is a dodecahedron. It's 3/4 the size of the Moon and is almost 13 times denser than water, meaning it has 30% more mass than the Moon. When we think about how much of an effect the Moon has on our oceans, creating the tides, it's clear that the core exerts a powerful force. And since the core is a perfect dodecahedron, that means it may also be creating its own time portals. Natural stargates may be more likely to occur when geometric vortex points on Earth's surface line up with this geometry in the core. If it takes 400 years for this geometry to make a full circuit inside Earth, then every day within that 400-year cycle will be different in terms of the alignments. That may be why the Maya used the Bakhtun as their largest cycle, other than the full calendar itself. It is a compelling idea, but if it's really true, then I would also expect this 400-year cycle should be doing something else that we can measure. Then we could make an even greater case for why the ancients would be so interested in tracking this cycle. I found a study by Takeshi Yukutake from 1971 that clearly spelled it out. Periods of Earth warming and cooling occur in cycles. This is well understood, as is the fact that small-scale cycles of about 40 years exist within larger-scale cycles of 400 years, which in turn exist inside still larger-scale cycles of 20,000 years, and so on. The small-scale cycles of 40 years are, of course, exactly two katans in length, again forming a very nice fit with the Maya calendar cycles. And even in 1971, Yukutake was aware that not only was there a 400-year warming and cooling cycle on Earth, there were also small changes in the rotational speed of Earth's core that took about 400 years to cycle through. This was rigorously proven in 1996, as we said, but obviously there had been some leading evidence well before then. In general terms, the medieval warm period ran from 1000 to 1400. The Little Ice Age ran from 1400 to 1900, but the uptrend began in 1800, right in tune with the cycle. That also means we are now at the exact halfway point. It's been 200 years since Earth began warming up again. That should also mean the temperatures will start going down again, since we're about to pass the top of the wave. And we may already be seeing that happening. I found even more supporting evidence when I read the work of Finnish scientist Timo Niroma, who explores the idea that solar activity is in some way directly related to planetary cycles. For example, Jupiter has an 11.86-year cycle, and the generally accepted average value for the sunspot cycle is 11.1 years. Niroma often uses the Elatina data, meaning he tracks the year-to-year variations in the amount of radiation we find in a 680-million-year-old rock sample from Elatina, South Australia, in 1982. There are 9.4 meters of laminations that span a total of 19,000 years of time. It isn't until we head into the fifth large web page of his analysis that we find multiple references to a 200-year sunspot cycle that has been found in Elatina and other sources. The solar activity is believed to be responsible for the cyclical changes in Earth's temperature. The historical data seem to show that the 200-year oscillation has been there at least since AD 200. The even centuries seem to have been cold, odd ones warm. Not to the accuracy of a year, but in the average anyway. Niroma quotes at least five different scientific studies that found a 200-year cycle in the amount of solar radiation reaching Earth. One thing we do have to keep in mind is that this may not actually be a solar cycle. It is possible that the rotation of Earth's geometric core determines how much solar radiation, or how little, can actually get through Earth's protective shield at any one time. The geometric relationships of the core may be causing the solar radiation levels and the overall temperature levels on Earth to rise and fall in an obvious 200-year pattern of change, perhaps by changing the permeability of the magnetosphere. It is utterly fascinating to realize that the Maya appear to have been tracking this exact same Earth cycle for thousands of years. I don't think they'd be very interested in long-term warming and cooling cycles if that's all it was. However, if this system also controls when the time portals open, then that cycle becomes much more interesting. Let's not forget that in this new physics model, there are multiple geometries that we have to look at, and they all nest together. So Earth's core is only one of the geometries we have to look at. There could very well be others, appearing in the different spherical layers within Earth that would be even more difficult for our scientists to detect at this point. Each of them would probably have a different rotational period. There may, however, be a way to locate them by studying their effects. The temporary local risk factor. Is there any additional proof that the Maya calendar may have been used to track time portals? There certainly appears to be. Two German scientists, Grazinev Ossar and Franz Bludorf, made a stunning discovery in 1998. They found what appears to be a vertical line in the Earth's energy fields, which rotates along at 1.86 degrees of longitude per day, for a total of about 194 days. Two of these cycles add up to 388 days. The reason why this line is so important is that if you happen to be in the wrong place on Earth when it crosses over you, or the right place, depending on what you're trying to do, a portal into time-space apparently opens. Fossar and Bludorf first found out about this cycle by noticing that four different aircraft incidents occurred in the same basic area. The infamous TWA-800 crash happened over the ocean east of Long Island on July 17, 1996. Several eyewitnesses, including a National Guard helicopter crew, reported seeing a bright object fly toward the jet and collide with it, where it then exploded in midair, killing everyone. Conspiracy theories were concocted that it was a missile or projectile, but it may actually have been a spherical portal of energy released by the Earth, as we will discuss. On August 9, 1997, Swissair 127 nearly collided with another unidentified bright object in the same area, east of Long Island. There were 388 days between TWA-800 and Swissair 127. Fossar and Bludorf had already been tracking two other airline incidents that both happened near Peggy's Cove, off the east coast of Canada, not too far northeast of Long Island. Swissair 111 detected smoke in the cab, tried to make an emergency landing but crashed, killing all 229 people aboard on September 2, 1998. Only 5 days later, Balair 188 experienced smoke in the kitchen and had to make an emergency landing, and this incident happened just a short distance east of the Swissair 111 event less than a week before. It was these two events, happening in the same area in such a short time, that first convinced Fossar and Bludorf that something might be going on. Then they noticed the 388-day interval between TWA-800 and Swissair 127, and were even more surprised to discover that there were 389 days between Swissair 111 and Swissair 127. From this beginning, they were able to calculate that a straight vertical line of invisible energy may be slowly crawling across the northern hemisphere at 1.86 degrees of longitude per day for a 194-day cycle. By tracking this line and calculating exactly where it was at any one time, they found fully 9 different airplane crashes that were directly correlated with its position. They called this the temporary local risk factor, or TLR. They admitted they did not know what was actually causing this. I was surprised that Fossar and Bludorf didn't crunch the numbers any further, but I was also delighted because it gave me the opportunity to rediscover things that we haven't known about for a long, long time. I believe that with further analysis, we will discover a spherical layer within the Earth that is slowly rotating in a 194-day orbit, and it will have a geometric structure such as the dodecahedron that we can track to know when these portals will open. There may even be ways to make these source field currents visible, as the ancients appeared to possess. If our model is correct, then the TLR cycle should also be a perfect subdivision of the Earth's own orbit. As soon as I did the numbers, I found that in 17 Earth years of 365.2422 days, there were 16 cycles of 388 days and 32 cycles of 194 days. A 17 to 16 cycle ratio definitely looks like a long-term geometric relationship between the orbit of the TLR cycle and the rotation of the Earth. But what about the Maya calendar? It didn't take long for me to find an even greater surprise. The Baktun in the Maya calendar is 144,000 days long, and there are almost exactly 742 TLR cycles in that same period of time. It becomes exact if you round up the TLR cycle to just over 194.07 days, which is probably a more accurate measurement of the cycle. This also meant there were 37.1 of these temporary local risk cycles in every 20-year Khatun, and 371 of them within 10 Khatuns, or roughly 200 years. The greater implications are that this is one of a series of geometric energy patterns nested inside the Earth that combine together at various times and create powerful effects, including portals into time-space. This cycle has direct effects on physical matter, precisely lines up with the Earth's orbit after 17 years, and fits perfectly into the Maya calendar. It was identified by studying equipment malfunctions and strange aerial phenomena. This also suggests the Maya may have been tracking time portals with their calendar, at least in the early days, given that the giant dodecahedron inside the Earth completes a full rotation every time the Maya calendar reaches the end of a Baktun. I think this is just the beginning of what we can discover once we really begin doing our homework. We do not yet know the exact geometric pattern that is causing these effects to occur, but that is obviously an important quest to pursue. Given the potential dangers involved with random accidents, it is important that this knowledge not be covered up or suppressed. Innocent lives can be saved by tracking the TLR cycle, learning more about it, and rerouting flight pathways around potential trouble spots, particularly when it fires up a vortex point on the grid.